Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, good evening. You're very welcome along. Joe Malloy with you. We have Paul McGinley coming up this hour. He'll give us his take on Bryson DeChambeau destroying the US Open field, maybe even destroying golf itself. We'll talk to Paul very shortly. On this day, this very day, in 2002, Armagh won their first and only All-Ireland Football Championship. We're going to check in with Joe Kernan, Enda McNulty and the goalkeeper Benny Tierney with us after 8 o'clock. On the football show, Dan McDonald is along post 9. And Lisa Fallon as well. This season is her very first as a head coach over in the UK. She is with the London City Lionesses, who broke away from Millwall. That's who they were affiliated with. So we'll chat to Lisa about a busy career over the last number of years, and one very much on the up as she embarks on her first season as head coach over in London. 53106 is the text number. We are at Off The Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, good evening.
How are you, Joe?
Nathan Murphy, hello to you.
Evening, Joe.
So Armagh coming up after 8 o'clock. Joe Kernan, Enda McNulty, Benny Tierney. There's lots of colour around this team, lots of stories. The two which grabbed me, I hadn't heard these before. They may well very well be true or not true. I'm going to have to fact or fiction them with the lads. One is that before the final, the management team got in touch with Muhammad Ali's representatives and he wrote them a good luck note, which was then put under the doors of the players in their hotel the morning of the match. And two is that on the drive to Croke Park, full blast on the coach, if this Armagh bus drove by you, what was playing on the coach, full volume, was Al Pacino's speech in Any Given Sunday. Every inch counts, Richie. Don't shake your head at me. Every inch counts.
I'm just imagining how many, because that's like peak Any Given Sunday. Like, I remember I was working in HMV around that time, and that DVD like sold a lot at the time and sold a lot to young men of a certain age, I guess I'll say. So I'm wondering how many dressing rooms that speech was either played verbatim from the DVD or was, I guess, cogged by a certain coach and transferred and passed off as his own material during a speech before a big game or a middling game or a little game.
Well, I have a friend who will remain nameless, but we had some Astro games around that time. They were heated affairs and he would listen to the Al Pacino speech on the way to Astro.
Just in the of a regular Tuesday night game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Every inch counts. Every inch counts.
Oh,
so that's God. On the way after 8 o'clock. Joe Kernan. Famously, you know, throwing away his loser's plaque at halftime, 4 points down in the final and all that. Enda McNulty and Benny Tierney with us.
What exactly it was, Joe, at halftime. It always seems to get lost a little bit. At first, people say it was his medal, his loser's medal. Then it was some sort of a plaque that the losers received. If you can get full confirmation on that, that'd be great.
I agree. I have seen it described as a plaque and a memento in the dispatches today, so we'll find out what it is. But then he famously produced, apparently, the winner's medal, which he had bought somewhere. I mean, I'm not sure what the eBay of the day was.
Ow.
But no, there was an auction, or one way or another, he had got a winner's medal, which he then produced out of the other pocket. I mean, look,
right.
I'm curious to know, Enda McNulty, sports psychologist, is this, you know, has this kind of psychology aged well? This, to me, feels very much focused on the outcome, and we're all meant to focus on the process, so...
When you're halftime in an All-Ireland final, Joe, I think you should focus on the outcome.
Maybe. There were 4 points down the time.
Go full Jordan, halftime.
You know what? It's the kind of thing, because they won, everything's okay. I mean, if they lose, it's a little bit David Brenty, isn't it?
If you lose, it's full on.
Jesus, and we knew then that he was too emotional. He'd lost the run of himself completely. We're wondering, this is the last thing. We need to be in a positive frame of mind, and we're talking about being losers.
Yes. Too emotional is what would have been thrown at them.
Yeah. What a great team, though. Like, we were up in Cross McGann a couple of years ago and met a lot of the lads. And met Francie Beliau. We got, I think we have the only recorded 10 seconds of Francie Beliau on the radio ever.
He did well.
Jeez, they were a tough team.
Yeah, very, very memorable team, you know. So we were, you know, chatting away. It's not, it's, we wouldn't do an anniversary for any old All-Ireland football final win, but it's on this very day. And it's their only win, and they're such a memorable team. So all those things.
That's
combined.
The thing. They're such a memorable team. You always kind of presume that they won more than they actually did. Because like the names, like they trip off the tongue, like the McConvilles and McGeanies and all that kind of stuff. Like it's just, it's nuts.
Yeah. So they're on the way after 8 o'clock. Paul McGinley coming up this hour. And Nathan, I wasn't really talking to you in too much detail. Were you bemoaning what DeChambeau did to Winged Foot? Did he destroy golf as well as the field?
I think it's been a little bit over the top, the reaction. He, yes, hits the ball as far, if not further, than the vast majority of players, but he didn't win it just because of that. In fact, you know, if you start breaking it down statistically, he didn't drive it as far as Rory McIlroy over the 4 days. He just had a better short game and put it better, and maybe mentally prepared himself better for what his short game will be needed, because as he said in the Wednesday, I'm going to drive it in the rough a lot, but I know I can get it up to the front edge. So he went into that with the attitude of, all right, I don't need to be in the middle of the fairway to win this, whereas you expect a lot of players did. But he's a pretty divisive figure. He's certainly moved from being sort of quirky and interesting into, as you say, whew, is he destroying the game? But I think, fair enough, analysts need to go and delve deep into what this may mean, and should they change the ball, should they look at the equipment. But I think some of his other, some of the other players coming out, you know, he's taking advantage of the system almost. And we're not talking about his bulk or anything like that. That somehow by putting on all this weight and being able to bomb it that long, he's taking advantage of something. He's not. He, you know, he's looked at this, he's looked at the stats, he saw what worked. It was a big decision because, remember, he was already a very good player even before he put on the three stone. He was already a, what, 7-8-time PGA Tour winner.
Yeah.
So he had a lot at stake if this went wrong. But he looked at the statistics, he saw what the benefits would be of adding an extra 20, 30 yards, and he's reaping the benefits of it. So, yeah, it's, I thought it was, it ended up being quite dull, which didn't help matters as well. So you have an hour of just discussing Bryson and having seen the brilliance, just talking him down. I think a little bit of it's been over the top.
I think it's been way over the top as well. Yeah, absolutely. Like when Westhuizen, who's, you know, the most aesthetic of players, won in 2010 at St Andrews, that was boring because he was just dominating the field. And so it's going to be boring when anyone wins that easily. But it was it was about strategy as much as anything. And it was about a short game. He was the seventh longest off the tee across that week. Seventh. So like,
I have a question about the course itself, because one of the things that they say made it boring, I saw a couple of comments on Twitter, was that after the 5 and 6 unders that were posted on the Thursday, that the USGA, you mentioned it, I think, Nathan, on Thursday, that the USGA wouldn't enjoy what they've seen so far this afternoon and would essentially turn the screw and make the course harder to play. And that, from a viewing experience, isn't regarded as the best either, because people want to see players making, not, you know, 20 under pars by the end of the weekend, but certainly be under par, making decent shots, making decent putts, and not walking around frustrated, rubbing their temples pretty much the whole round, kind of wondering how they're going to eke anything out of the course. And that, more than anything, I think, had an impact on viewing pleasure at the weekend. I don't know what the golfing fraternity make of that kind of thing.
Again, I think that's what you would say after that tournament. But if you think back to 2006 at Winged Foot, it was absolute carnage because you had four or five people collapsing over the final few holes. So that kind of golf can be intriguing. It can be hugely entertaining. But you're right, when it goes the opposite way, it didn't feel like anybody could make a run on Sunday. So those players that were six shots back at the turn, you really didn't see that they could put together a string of birdies. They just weren't out there. And once Wolf fell away, but I was one of those who was hoping it would get really tough to see the carnage, but it just meant there was just one man standing, which, much like if you weren't Irish, Shane Lowry's 6-shot win wasn't that dramatic. There was nobody near him coming down that back nine. It was just the brilliant scenes that we saw.
I'm just thrown that Richie McCormack asked a genuine golf question. Like halfway through there, I was like, "What? Where's this going? Where's the punchline?"
I even came up with an analogy by the time I'd finished talking. It's like those kind of courses, I guess, are like they always talk about Monaco and Formula One as long as you start on pole and you don't F up somewhere along the line, you're going to win because nobody's going to overtake you. And similarly, those kind of courses seem to play the same way, whereby once you manage to put together a game that isn't going to put you haywire anywhere and there aren't many chances taken, then I guess the DeChambeau way of doing it, whether he hits long or not, if he's analytical and he plays cleverly, then he does have a hope of staying out in front.
Funny enough, I think he'll be able to go low as well. Augusta is in November. So the next two majors are the Masters. That's kind of a cool thing to say, isn't it? Mm. So November, by then he plans to put on another 10 pounds of bulk and be playing with a 48-inch driver, which is about 5 inches longer than the average. So things are going to be interesting. Was Joe's Astro friend Dave McIntyre? I'd say it doesn't take much to rile him up. It's all those protein shakes. What are you talking about? Dave McIntyre's very easygoing man. Arma, luckiest team ever, says anonymous texter. I wouldn't have regarded them as lucky. They did win both finals by a point. You'd regard them as revolutionaries in some ways, and certainly like full of quality. I mean,
they're the sort of team that now, with time having moved on, you can fully appreciate the greatness and see why they won an All-Ireland. When, as Richie say, the names roll off the tongue, and you can go through the 15 and the character that is in that squad and all we've learned about them since. It's no surprise they won an All-Ireland.
No, I mean, you'd struggle to say McGeaney, McConville, Steve McDonald. These are lucky players who overachieved. Who would win in a fight between Big Old Bryson and Kieran McGeaney? I'd go pay-per-view for that one, says Sean. Well, I think it's obvious. Kieran McGeaney would murder him.
He
would literally commit murder.
Kieran McGeaney is one of the most fearsome men to shake hands with.
Yeah, it's rough.
Well, he has technique as well. I mean, he's grappled with Conor McGregor. I think he could manage, Bryson. So
even before that, like I remember meeting him in Coppers in an OB we did, and shook hands with him afterwards. And I wasn't right for a day or two. It hurt, it hurt. That man's handshake is something else. Superhuman.
And a call outside Donegal man reckons that this Armagh team were the first to teach him about the cruelty of sport. If they hadn't beaten us in the Ulster final, it could have been us. He reckons. Well, I mean,
he was three that year.
Well, if Michael Murphy wasn't born, Mayo would have about 8 All-Irelands by now. So,
if they hadn't beaten us, it could have been us. I mean, come on.
Where does that end?
Right, let's start this news round. We're up and running. It is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. And Richie, you're starting with that. Well, I guess the kind of story that is going to become somewhat prevalent over the coming months. Mm-hmm.
I think it is, yeah. This evening's Carabao Cup third round tie between Leighton Orient and Tottenham was called off a couple of hours prior to kickoff. It's after a number of Orient players tested positive for COVID-19. Testing at EFL clubs is no longer mandatory, which led to a number of Premier League offering pay-ups testing prior to this week's League Cup ties. Tottenham were one of those, with Orient's testing carried out after Sunday's 2-2 draw with Mansfield. Rearranging the third round tie won't be easy, with Spurs in Europa League action in North Macedonia later this week and possibly next as well, while the Carabao Cup fourth round ties are also due to be played next week. But Orient chairman Nigel Travis feels it would be unfair for them to have to forfeit the game.
We think the appropriate action is for this league to for this game to take place. I mean, can you imagine the outrage that if in the next round, say the fourth round, Spurs and Chelsea, that one of those teams is impacted the same way if the game didn't take place? Can you imagine the outrage that you'd hear on Sky Sports and on the radio stations? This clearly is not a good policy, that someone who is doing, some organisation like Leighton Orient, following all the guidelines, doing the right thing, if we don't play the game and we're forced to forfeit it, it is a demonstration that doing the right thing doesn't work. It is an incentive for people not to test, and that will only create a bad and worse situation in the football world and probably the UK at large.
So, Rich, are we saying it's the case that we don't know if this game is forfeited or will be refit?
Yeah, we don't know yet. I think the impulse is that it will be rescheduled. But as I mentioned there, Tottenham's schedule and the Football League schedule as a whole is so tight that there's no room for these games essentially to be refixed anywhere. And the talk was before, in different leagues and in different competitions in England, that if a game can't go ahead as the result of positive tests, then the team who can't fulfil the fixture effectively will have to forfeit. Now, they're trying their best to get this done, and they're saying they did their best by everything. But the problem that we're going to come across in the Carabao Cup, in the FA Cup later on in the season, is that EFL clubs don't have to get tested and aren't being tested on a mandatory basis. So if a Premier League club happens to be drawn against a lower league team that have come up against positive tests, then you're going to see those games being called off, or you're going to see them having to be refixed, and that's going to play havoc with the Premier League sides.
Yeah, havoc is the word. There are games going ahead. United are in action.
Yeah, two of them just underway at 7 o'clock. Two games kicked off. Padraig Amond in the Newport County side, that are at home to Watford, and West Brom are taking on Brentford. Darragh O'Shea on the Baggies bench. There's a 7:30 starts to West Ham's meeting with Hull City. Josh Cullen starts in the midfield for West Ham. Darren Randolph's in goal, and Connor Coventry's on the bench. And at 8:15, as you mentioned there, Manchester United travelling to Little Kenilworth Road to face Luton Town. Here at home, Drogheda looking to close the gap on SSE or Tristy First Division leaders Bray to just the 2 points tonight. They welcome Shamrock Rovers 2 to United Park, where kickoff is at 7:45.
Meanwhile, reaction to, well, lockdown both here and now the UK getting its act together. So that's affecting sport, clearly.
It is. The Premier League says it's disappointed by the UK government's decision to postpone plans to allow supporters to return to matches from the start of next month. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson made the announcement today as part of plans to tackle the spread of coronavirus in that country. The Premier League says it's certain fans in stadiums will be as safe, if not safer, than any other public activity currently permitted. Meanwhile, Fleetwood manager Joey Barton says today's announcement by Johnson could spell the end for some lower league clubs.
It's disappointing. I think everyone wants fans back in the stadium, albeit, you know, it has to be within the, you know, the safety remit. And I've seen, obviously, I watched Marseille PSG at the weekend, and there was a crowd back in the stadium, and, you know, albeit it was a select bunch and it wasn't the full stadium, but I thought it made a big difference to the game, to the occasion, and I thought, you know, you forget almost that there was fans once in the stadium. Now, you know, you're so used to playing behind, you know, closed doors. We've been at this for a while with the playoffs, that it almost would feel weird now to have fans back in, which is scary, because I think without fans we won't have football. I think certainly at our level and League Two and Conference and non-league, if we don't get fans back in the stadium, you know, there's not going to be long that clubs can survive without the revenue, because they're absolutely vital.
Endicott is pointing out he was 7 when he learned about the cruelty of sport via Arma. What age were you, Nathan? You 89 was a bit too early, I suspect. Was it 96? Was it watching Liam McHale being sent off? Is that when you learned about the cruelty?
Yeah. 89, there was I was 7 in 89, so there was a bit of joy and excitement. And as I often say, you know, we went to the airport to see the team come home, so that was a highlight of the 80s for me. Yeah, 96, 97 was just pure heartbreak, and then it sort of set in stone. That was my life. That was my formative years. My teenage years were just general heartbreak.
It's your destiny. What other heartbreak in your teenage years specifically?
I probably won't go into it right now. It's okay with you, Joe.
It's a family show.
Breaker than heartbroken.
Oh, I'm sure. Listen, 53106, if Nathan Murphy broke your heart.
Good God.
This is a radio slot I can get on board with. Conor Murray.
Yeah, Munster say the scrum half is progressing well from a thigh problem. He sustained that injury in the province's Pro 14 semi-final defeat to Leinster earlier this month. Andrew Conway, Munster say, is edging closer to a return, while John Klein and Dan Goggin will resume training this week. They've got a fixture against Connacht A coming up very shortly indeed.
Richie, does any word come in on Joey Carberry when you get these dispatches?
Yes, it does. Joey Carberry is usually posted towards the bottom of it. I don't think he but he has in previous ones, where it just says, along with the long-term absentees, that they're continuing their rehab program. And to be honest with you, like, that's the same for any province and any player who is out for a long term. It doesn't give you a sense of when they'll be back training until it's probably the week before they're due back in the training pitch in any meaningful sense. And that, like, as I say, that's like an Irish rugby wide thing. It's not Munster or Joey Carberry specific.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Sorry, Nathan.
Did you ask Richie that because you said a tie problem and it just got into your head, Joey Carberry?
No. It jumped into my head given the conversations we've been having about Irish rugby, and, you know, we're coming into the international period now, 2 Six Nations games, the November internationals. You're kind of looking to Joey Carberry, who's getting, you know, more important by the week, really. So, and just like, what's going on? You know,
well, nobody knows. Like, there doesn't seem to be any real expectation that he'll be back this season.
No,
but again, nobody knows. No. Maybe that's how they want to play it, and he just returns. You find out
they're better off that way at this stage. Like, they're better off at this stage just not saying nothing until he's pretty much sure of a return, because like, the questions will start ramping up. Like, Van Graan's going to obviously face those questions in Zoom press conferences or real ones. It's like, oh, we haven't heard anything from Joey Carby in the last 6 months. When are we going to hear something? Like, that will start at some point. But I think the longer months are saying nothing, it just gives him more space to recover.
Yeah, it's all very worrying. You'd wish him well, that's for sure. Hopefully we see him back soon. The Donegal, so there was a COVID situation in Donegal. What's the story here? Is this county final?
Yeah, Sunday's Donegal football county football final meeting of Kilcare and Naofe Cunnell has been postponed. It's after a member of the Kilcare panel tested positive for COVID-19. The club say other players are also awaiting test results. The final now has been put back to the evening of Wednesday, October 7th, as a result of all of that.
Okay. So we have news of Bernard Laporte. He's been in custody.
Yeah, Bernard Laporte, the French rugby president, claims he is the subject of a coup. He was held in custody today as part of investigations of alleged undue favouritism shown to the Montpellier owner Moed Altrad. Altrad is also being questioned, along with French Rugby Federation Vice President Sir Simon, the FFR's International Relations Executive Nicolas Urquet, and Claude Acher, the Director General of the 2023 Rugby World Cup Organising Committee. The investigation centres around alleged pressure put on the French League's Appeals Committee, which saw a Montpellier punishment reduced in 2017. Shortly thereafter, Altrad were named as the French national team shirt sponsors, company offering financial support to the successful Rugby World Cup bid. The questioning comes 10 days before Laporte is due to go up for re-election, and he denies any wrongdoing.
Dear, oh dear. Let's go from the ridiculous to the sublime. Text in from Denny. I can only imagine the affairs of the heart that were settled out the back of Nathan's meatpacking factory in Ballyhonnis.
There weren't too many women working in the meatpacking factory, I can assure you. It was Midas Nightclub.
Never have I seen a more nailed on JP made up that text.
Yeah.
All right, where are we going next?
We'll stay with matters legal in France. Swiss prosecutors are recommending that PSG president Nasser Al-Khelaifi is sentenced to 28 months in prison. They've also recommended that former FIFA Secretary General Jérôme Valcke serve a three-year sentence. The case centres around alleged corruption regarding the awarding of broadcast rights for the 2026 and 2030 World Cups to the Al-Khelaifi-run Be In Sports. The defence are due to begin giving evidence tomorrow in that case.
And Rich, very finally, James McLean, Celtic Links.
Possibly, yes. Stoke manager Michael O'Neill has poured cold water on an imminent move for James McLean to Celtic. The Republic of Ireland winger has been linked with the move to the Scottish champions, who recently signed his fellow Derryman Shane Duffy. O'Neill says there has been no approach yet.
I think that's probably just a rumour that has been created by someone, whether that has certainly not come from our end. James isn't a player that equally that we're looking to lose at this minute in time. But I think, you know, the nature of the transfer window is that I think you have to be flexible, and if any situation arises in any player, you have to give it consideration, particularly where we are at this minute in time. We have to obviously deal with the rules of financial fair play. We have to deal with a squad which is a lot bloated. So I don't think, you know, James is no different from any other player in the squad, that if a situation arose, then we have to consider it. But at this minute in time, I think that would be highly unlikely.
Okay, highly unlikely, but didn't kind of shoot it down as impossible either. Nathan, that's an interesting potential move. Like, you could see McLean wreaking havoc up there, doing very well, winning a couple of medals, full houses. You know, you're really kind of revitalising. Now, he was player of the season last year, so it's not like his form is down. But, you know, exciting move. Probably a lifelong dream for McLean.
Absolutely, James McLean, a lifetime dream. And alongside Shane Duffy.
Yeah.
Two Derrymen at the heart of 10 in a row.
Yeah, so all of that's good. On the other hand, man, in a Neil Lennon-esque way, he would be a lightning rod. I mean, geez, it would be an intense time as well.
Yeah, it may suit everybody that there's no crowds for the Old Firm for the next little while. But geez, at the same time, you'd love to see it, and he would relish it, absolutely relish it.
Well, we'll see what happens.
God knows what would happen.
Final line before I go, Joe. Cullum Kavanagh, I'm just seeing there as well. It's just going up on the OTB Sports app and the site. The Toronto footballer Cullum Kavanagh announcing his inter-county retirement. So you can check out more of that on the website.
Okay, he had quite the career. I'm sure we'll catch up with him in the next couple of days. He can enjoy his retirement. Three All-Ireland medals, was he? No, he wouldn't have been there in 03, was he?
No, I think he was there. He was there in 08.
He was definitely there in 08.
Would have been. No, I don't think he was there in 05. I think he was just there in 08.
Right, okay. Yeah, I guess that would be an extraordinary long career if he was there in 03. But still, brilliant player, brilliant career. We'll chat to him in the coming days. Nathan Murphy, thanks very much.
Cheers, Joe.
Richie McCormick, as ever, thank you. McCormick.
Thanks, Dave.
Richie McCormack, thank you. And we've got Paul McGinley coming up next.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.